The Talk of the Northwest, The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning. You're very welcome along to another edition of The Greg Hughes Show. Thanks to Donald Kavanagh for sitting in for me yesterday. And it's good to be back, of course, after that really short hiatus. 4 minutes past nine on this Thursday, the 27th of August, and it's another bumper 2 hours to keep you informed and entertained. We've got lots to talk about, but of course we want to hear what you want to say as well. How do you get in touch? WhatsApps and texts, 086 60 25000, 086 60 25000. Outside the Republic, 00353, drop the O and away you go. You can call us on 07491 25000, or email comments at highlandradio.com. Feel free to watch the show. We're streaming on the YouTube channel, so you can watch us across your mobile devices and on your smart TV. Just search the YouTube app if you want to watch us on the telly. It's a very visual show. Most of our guests are either in studio or join us remotely. And we're across Facebook and on the X platform as well. Thursday's a busy day for papers. Let's crack on. You need more TDs, don't you? I think that's the one thing that we get consistently on this programme into the comment line is we need more TDs. There's not enough TDs. Let's get some more TDs. Well, that's not really what people text us about, but it could be on the way. John McAteer writes in the Tyrconnell Tribune, with the latest CSO data showing Ireland's population has increased by 376,000 since the 2002 census, it'll mean an increase of 12 new TDs. That's if an election is held this year. But with a general election 3 years away, the growth trend is showing the next Dáil may have 20 more deputies in Leinster House. It would also seem likely that a number of extra council seats will also be created. To retain councillors, each representing 4,500 people, it appears there'll be three extra members, with Letterkenny MDC having first call, as their baseline is well over 30,000. Ireland's population now stands at over 5.525 million, and over the last 3 years, it has been growing at an average rate of 81,000 annually. At our own county level, the latest CSO figures show Donegal's population reached an estimated 182,500 people at the end of April. It's an increase of 9.3% since 2022. The default in my head of population would have been like 168,000, but in Donegal now close on 189,000 people. So I did see somewhere else during the week, and I'd have to go back and have a look at where I found that, about there's a certain amount of TDs where you might need a referendum. I'll double check that. But anyway, John's looked at the stats, and according to the stats, which often don't lie, according to the stats, we would need more TDs and more councillors. What do you think about that? This is good news. We covered this story right from the very start, and it's on the news today. And that's the option now of cremation. And it's always been an option, but you'd have to have travelled a distance. I'm not sure how many people that would have put off or not. But now, and there's lots of reasons I think people might want to be cremated. There really is. It's not just about, you know, I'd prefer to be cremated than buried. There's practical reasons why someone might want to be cremated as well. Well, the first ever crematorium in Donegal is to be publicly unveiled within days. Well-known Letterkenny funeral business owner Michael Mourning received planning permission from Donegal County Council last year to build the area's first crematorium. It's now reached an advanced stage, and Lily Hill Funeral Home and Crematorium is to be formally announced next week. A few private cremations have already been held at the state-of-the-art premises at Carnamugga in the mountaintop area of Letterkenny. The purpose-built facility is designed to accommodate around 500 cremations a year, which will greatly reduce the impact on families that until now had to leave the county for cremation. But I think what happens is when I think it addresses more than that, because it becomes a realistic possibility psychologically. For a lot of people, cremation is somewhere else, even though it's available to us and many people avail of that. I think when you have one on your doorstep, it'll become a conversation far more than, well, it's closer than what we're used to have to. It becomes more of a viable option. I think that's just the human condition, the way we think. So interesting. I don't know. I'm kind of leaning towards it myself, honestly, to be honest with you. I don't know what you guys think out there. The Derry News Recently installed British Secretary of State Chris Bryant appeared to criticise the Stormont executive during his first visit to Derry. He also acknowledged the existing regional imbalance between the North West and Greater Belfast, saying sometimes for all sorts of different reasons, the North West just gets a little bit left out of the equation until we are very, and we are very determined to change all of that. And that kind of aligns with his boss's views. Burnham, he is of the view that government politics is very London-based. It's very southerly central. In other words, the investment, the prosperity goes to where the seats of power are. We see that here. He's, of course, his boss, this guy's boss, Andy Burnham, is a Manchester person, and he wants to see, you know, not just investment and development being devolved from London, but also actually, you know, government to be devolved. In other words, he can work out of Manchester. And of course, so he's going to be appointing people. Excuse me, please. He's going to be appointing people to the regions who are of like mind. I don't know if you saw any of those videos, and almost too hard to watch, of the awful flooding in Nepal. Such is the way life is now. The CCTV videos and camera phone footage of these devastating floods, and if you look at some of the footage, and it's hard to see, it's people going about their everyday life. They clearly can hear something coming down from the mountains and begin to run, and then this wall of water, the size of an incredibly tall building, just washes straight through and takes everything in its path. And I was also watching some of the footage from further up, where, you know, rivers are effectively dry, and then this water starts to cascade down, and of course it increases in volume and momentum, and then goes through these population areas. We have this strange way of reporting things, major catastrophes like earthquakes, and there's this default reporting that the media do, which annoys me a little bit. I don't think it tells the full story. So they will go confirmed death. So they'll go, you know, three people are have confirmed to have died from an earthquake or this awful situation in Nepal. We know it's hundreds. And then it's three one day, then it's up to 100 the next, then it's up to 300, then nothing. And then someone's discovered having been, you know, missing for 3 or 4 days, and then they do that angle, and then a kid will turn up and they'll do that angle, and then it's disappeared. It's this formula of reporting these disasters when it's clear hundreds of people have died, and I think they need to get that out from the get-go. And amongst them, two Irish citizens, they're feared missing after a flash flood killed at least 137 people and left hundreds more unaccounted for in the in Nepal. And again, it's this kind of reporting. They've just picked a number, an arbitrary number. 137 people have been confirmed dead. That's, I mean, it's hundreds of people, and they need to break out of this mold of reporting, because it's every time there's one of these natural disasters. Alpine Eco Trek, which offers guided tours and expeditions in Nepal, said the two Irish people had been with 12 British nationals who were also missing on the tour across the Nepal-Tibet border. Nepal police said last night 157 bodies had been recovered and more than 40 people were injured and receiving treatment in hospital. But as I say, from those videos that I've seen, way more than that, unfortunately, succumbed to this wall of water and debris and houses and trees and mud, and God help them all. Meta, they own Facebook, WhatsApp. That court case was settled in the United States. I mentioned it on the show. 18 billion euro they are paying out. And they'll pay 18 billion euro to settle a lawsuit alleging it deliberately made platforms addictive for children. The social media giant will also be forced to introduce safety measures, including daily usage limits, nighttime blocks, and stronger age verification checks. They didn't admit any liability in this deal, by the way. But the controls will only apply in the US, sparking calls for government in the EU to speed up the introduction of an under 16 social media ban. The truth is though, and it's not covered in this reporting, there are dozens of these cases right across America and elsewhere, and the social media companies are going to have to do more, and Meta are not going to risk massive fines in the EU as well. And as they roll these out in the United States, you can be sure They'll roll them out in this part of the world as well. That lawsuit, by the way, against Meta was brought by 20 US states, and a civil trial began in Oakland, California last week. The jury heard that Meta, which owns Instagram, Facebook and WhatsApp, among others, knew its products harmed children's mental health, but deliberately designed them to be addictive, hooking users and hiding the truth, which the company denied. Instagram boss Adam Mosseri testified on Tuesday, but the settlement has spared Meta chief executive Mark Zuckerberg from having to do the same. So there you go. The government, police agencies are still scrambling to try and figure out how you can avoid another tragedy like which we saw on the M9 and has been mirrored elsewhere. And it has to be said too, it's only by pure luck and chance that we haven't seen way more of these. They've been averted before they happened. But technologies, this is in the Irish Times, technologies such as aerial detection and early warning systems on electronic signage will be discussed at a high-level meeting on road safety to address wrong-way driving on motorways. The problem with this is that this is a good idea because, you know, we need to do everything that we can to try and limit this. But if we have a system whereby someone drives the wrong way up a motorway and motorists are advised of that and pull to one side, it doesn't actually stop it. It probably makes it a little safer. But in a way, it might actually encourage more to do so because they know or they might suspect that their pathway has been cleared. The Minister of State with responsibility for road safety, Sean Canney, has called a meeting tomorrow, which will be attended by senior officials from Transport Infrastructure Ireland and the Road Safety Authority officials from the Department of Transport, and they'll try and come up with some ideas. But as I say, it might make it safer for those that want to drive the wrong way up a motorway and evade Gardaí. But at the same time, you have to try and protect the general population, don't you? The Irish Farmers Journal, there'll be no... the West, us, will not be in a position to supply significant quantities of fodder to the South and Southeast. Regional farm leaders have warned sizable surpluses of fodder are not available on farms in the West. Farmer representative maintained where stocks are available, farmers may not be willing to sell them at this point. So, of course, with the weather and the way it played out, there was better growth in the West and North than there was in the East and South. In the East and South, they weren't able to acquire as much fodder as they normally would have, and we didn't do too bad in this part of the world. But quote here, "I can't see there being a big oversupply of fodder in the West and Northwest," said Leitrim IFA chair Liam Gilligan. "We have to budget for a seven-month winter here, and I can't see farmers surrendering fodder and possibly leaving themselves short." I wonder what farmers down the country might think if we have what they might see as spare up here, but we aren't using it. Yesterday, I presume there was plenty of coverage of the sad passing of Dolly Parton, who was an amazing artist, seemingly a great woman as well, and the tributes to that extent, the tributes have, reached that extent. And I was thinking, you know, earlier on today, there's lots of people actually feel people's deaths, celebrity deaths, very personally. I don't. I can be slightly detached in relation to this. It's very sad Dolly Parton had died. She had a fantastic life, a fantastic career, and I don't feel her loss personally. I don't mean that bad, by the way, but what I'm saying in that I recognise that there are some people that a celebrity dies and it feels like a real loss to them. It is a real loss, but you understand, like a personal loss, like a close friend or a family member. And it's an interesting thing that some people have a much stronger bond with people through their music or their art or whatever it might be. But Dolly Parton died surrounded by loved ones after a brief and private cancer battle. It has emerged. The country music legend, actress and philanthropist had been dealing with kidney and autoimmune issues prior to her death on Tuesday at the age of 80. And she released a video back in May, which was very dollified, where she talked of, made this analogy of her being a broken down car that needed certain things changed, but that she would be back. Unfortunately, despite her strength and desire, that did not happen. And there was another loss yesterday to fans of the Home Alone series and others. The Fishnets and Suspenders, Face Up Basque,
or lace-up basque and smeared red lipstick is one of the most recognisable looks in film history. Tim Curry, the actor famous for embodying a string of weird and terrifying roles, has died at the age of 80 also. The UK-born star was best known as alien scientist Dr. Frank N. Furter in musical film The Rocky Horror Picture Show after playing him on stage in the West End. So another celebrity death there. We're joined on the programme by Mary Coyle, chairperson of Catch Bad Eddie. Good morning to you, Mary. How are you keeping?
Good morning, Greg. How are you? I'm actually about to board a plane, Greg.
You? Okay, wow. What do you want to do? Can we keep talking?
Keep talking. I have 5 minutes.
Okay. Right. What is the story with... Because I was down there during the week. Saw Bad Eddie and... You can see the boat is deteriorating, and I did recall plans were once afoot for something to immortalise it. Where are we at in relation to that? What are the plans?
Right. Well, back then, I suppose, there was a big push on to replace Bad Eddie with a steel structure. We did a lot of groundwork at that time, and we were working along with Donegal County Council, is Ursula Gelterte, and there were plans put together by Doran Consulting at that time. And the cost of a replica at that time was $723,000. That was exclusive of that. And on top of that, Greg, we had to apply for a foreshore licence. And there was nobody assigned to the project at that time through the council. We also had to get an environmental impact assessment done. And at that time, Greg, that was just a whole lot of money. It was a lot of money. And, we went to look for grants. There was none available from File to Ireland at that time. There was none available from File to Ireland that time. Mm. So really, basically, it is now forms part of the new plan for Gidor, and we will try and do something. But that was a lot of money back then when we had a lot of other issues in Gidor. As you know, there are two hotels there that need to be fixed up. There's a lot of things. There was a housing. There were so many people looking for housing at that time. And do you know, Greg? It was pushed out until we would see. I really have to go, Greg. But
okay. I don't want to tell you, please. There is some money still there. Are plans afoot, or is this down the pecking order?
No, there is plans afoot. We do still want to do something with Bad Eddie, but at this point in time, it forms the plan of Gidor. There was €12,542 raised at that time from the concert on the beach, and it is in a bank account. It is safe. It is. That is it. I really have
okay,
to go.
Okay, just go. So okay, you don't have to keep saying it's okay, Mary. I understand. Okay. Thank you very much indeed, Mary Coyle. There. So we're no further on as such. It obviously big money, 700,000. I didn't realise it was that that high. Fuel costs. Some of you texting in already this morning. The fuel companies posting record profits, whilst we, the Joe Soap, have to deal with increased fuel prices, is taking the hand. The idea of a society is to benefit the people in its apes together. Strong, but greed and corruption have made our society a hostile entity. It is. I struggle greatly when companies, electricity, home heating oil, petrol. Now, I'm not talking about your local home heating oil supplier, and I'm not talking about your local petrol station. They're making pennies on the litre. But those that supply the retailers and the people above them, how, when the prices go up or the product becomes, you know, less accessible, how can they be making more money? It doesn't make sense. That's not fair, because that means we not only insulate them from any losses, we actually pay for greater profits. On school holidays, my children are back at national school next week. One is back today, actually, on the 27th of August. The other is back on the 31st of August. It's the same come Halloween, Christmas and Easter holidays. They close and open at different times. As a household with two working parents, I can't understand why school holidays are not the same calendar year. Does anyone else agree? I'm sure everyone in your situation agrees. What is the difference? Is it down to some sort of a latitude with days that schools have, you know, where they can take them for teachers' days or whatever it might be? Why are schools opening and closing at different times, and when did that change? You might be a school teacher that's off and can text or WhatsApp 086 60 25000 and let us know. It is difficult. It makes it a little bit more difficult for families. There's no doubt about that. I'm a private bus driver, says the listener, and I was in Burton Port last Friday dropping tourists off who were going to Arranmore for the weekend. There's a port-a-loo on the harbour and I went to use it. Well, it was completely full, that's all I'll say. I went back yesterday to collect them, that would have been Monday, and I went to the port-a-loo again hoping that it would have emptied, but it wasn't. This is the only toilet available on the harbour for people waiting to cross the ferry. Who's responsible for cleaning this? Also, the bin is overflowing with rubbish. Well, there's plenty of local elected representatives in that area, as there is every area. Local businesses as well. I don't know. Someone give us an insight. What a horrible experience for anyone heading out to one of the most beautiful places on the planet. The only port-a-loo, according to this bus driver, on last Friday, and this was really before the big crowds probably were heading over for the various events, and it was full, and not full of people, all right, full of plops and other types of stuff. What's going on? We really need to get those basic things right, don't we? What do you think? 086 60 25000. Back with more after a break. Okay, we're joined on the programme now by Shankar, originally from Nepal, but now living in Letterkenny. Shankar, thank you for joining us this morning.
Yeah, hi.
Absolutely devastating scenes from Nepal. Clearly, you're looking at the coverage. Have contact, hopefully, with home. It's awful what we are seeing.
Is that right now? I talk to my parents and my relatives. They are fine, but the condition is very bad. The people is very missing. On the relatives they are eagerly waiting, looking after for their relatives, and the condition is very bad right now.
There was no warning, Shankar, was there? This is just an upstream event, and people were caught unawares, and I think that's what's led to such a great loss of life.
Actually, the warning is there, but they don't have the sufficient time for the... It's too quickly. It came in the glacier is the from the Tibet side. They came to the flood in Nepal, and so quickly... Within a 15 minutes, the level of the water rise up to 10 meters within 15 minutes. The people who live beside the river area, mostly they are the affected and they are all missing. And the tourists also, so many people are all those who do trekking sites or all the sites of the river people, they're all missing. And it's very bad condition right now.
Having spoken to family, Shankar, who thankfully are... Okay, what are they saying about what's happening over there?
Right now, I talked to my relatives, they are okay, but the people and the government is they are doing their best to relieve for the relief and the whoever people they are in the like in the place they can rescue them. They are doing the rescue operations right now, and after rescue, the other countries also supported for the like relief package, relief funds also they declare one accounts also for the Prime Minister Relief Fund accounts are there. If anybody wants to help them, they can help through the Prime Minister Relief Fund account. These are the things their government are doing their best to provide, give the safety and the for the people.
We have obviously a figure of the loss of life. It's an official figure which doesn't tell the full story. Shankar, how many people do you fear or how many are you concerned may have died in this tragedy?
You see, more than 300, 400 people have died. Maybe till now, they said, with the figure, they are saying around 188 people, 190 people are, they got died, and there are almost 800 plus people are missing. And the thing of that, 800 plus people are missing, and we don't know where they are, if they are survived or they are, we pray they are survived, they are well, but we don't know exactly the where they are. Rescue operation is going on, and the government is doing as best as they can.
Okay. Well, listen, our thoughts are with you and your family and your native country people as well, Shankar. An awful, awful tragedy. And we hope the country can recover as many people alive as is possible and rebuild as soon as possible. Shankar, thank you for your time. That is Shankar there from the Lumini province in Nepal, now living in Letterkenny. Right, let's get back to some of your comments here. A caller says, Hi, Greg, I see the government is handing out more cash to certain media outlets as long as they support the mass immigration agenda. I'm thinking of the recent awarding of bursaries to commission a man for the issue of mass immigration is the most important debate that no one's allowed to have. I don't really know how that works, just to give you our insight into it. I mean, the majority of, like, say, for instance, RTE is fully funded by the taxpayer. There have been changes in recent years whereby there are certain revenue streams, tiny amounts of money in the reality of it, where you know, all radio stations can get access to it. But it's often, like, say, for instance, the Music Month thing, whereby we're trying to get the next big star. That is funded by the license payer. But, I mean, you heard the money that's involved. It's like €875 for the winning for acts that perform, which is not insignificant, don't get me wrong. But if you're talking about stations outside of RTE getting money from Commissioner Mann, it's not keeping heads above water. It's the majority of independent radio, all of it is raised through advertising, sponsorship, etc. So there's not enough there, really. And there is no active influence over radio stations. That's I can tell you that as a fact, because I wouldn't work in one if there was. So I can only speak from my perspective. So there's no influence from government in relation to us. It's me, Caroline and Shannon, really, that put the show together and decide what we talk about, and we, the listeners, decide what we talk about and all that type of stuff. So there is no real influence. Now, what I will recognise is that when you have, if you're a radio station or a TV station that's fully funded by the licence payer, and you have ministers on your morning news show every morning, and they are the same ones that decide what your revenue intake would be from licence fees year after year after year, is there a soft influence? Possibly. Is there a policy influence where you have to say certain things in a certain way? No, I wouldn't say so. But anyway, I appreciate it. The reason I'm mentioning that is that I'd far prefer if we had these conversations out loud than people thinking that maybe a show like this could be influenced in any way, shape or form. We were in Rossnail a couple of weeks ago and bought two ice creams. She paid with Revolut on the phone and was charged £13 sterling. Is it legal to charge sterling in Ireland? People need to be careful when paying with their phones. £13 for two ice creams. Is it legal? Yeah, I mean, I presume so. Or is it, actually? It's a very good question. I don't know, but I don't care. €7.50 for an ice cream. No, thank you. It's very funny how Ireland aligns itself with Europe on so many things, but manages to act alone when it suits. Interesting point. They give some examples. VRT, tax on fuel, cigarettes, alcohol, etc. We're always being told we have to follow what Europe tells us until it suits us not to, I suppose. I'm getting through some different subjects here at the moment because we invite people to text in on whatever is important to them. So it's a good opportunity for me to catch up here. I've reported numerous TikTok and Facebook videos showing dangerous driving, and I get the same reply every time. The social media doesn't believe it's in violation of their standards. And therein lies the problem. It's all computer generated. And to be honest with you, at the moment, that AI interpretation of what is you know, what's legal and what's not legal on Facebook, I'm having a problem with it on my own Facebook page at the moment, sharing a link about a drug seizure in Letterkenny, and they think I'm selling drugs, and I can't get a human to have a look at it either. So there you go. Right, following on from our conversation on coastal location codes on beaches being launched at Nairn Blue Flag Beach, we are joined now by Brendan Tiny Vaughan. Hi, Brendan. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg. Lovely morning here in Carrigart.
Do you know? Oh, you're at home. Yeah, it's lovely here too. And actually, we're going to have a nice day whilst the rest of the country doesn't, which is nice. We can't get to say that too often. Right. You were listening to this new system to try and identify locations for emergency services, and it got you thinking. What's the story?
Yeah, that's correct. I was listening to Brian Care there, and it's a great initiative altogether. And I was up in Glenveagh National Park there last year, myself and Eva, the daughter. And we were up there and we were walking around. We walked a good bit around the place. And I was saying to her, I says, look, if anybody sprains an ankle or comes into difficulty, there is no... How do you find the person? How do you find the location? So I went into the castle there. I found a member of staff and I just happened to say to them, I says, would it not be an idea if you put something on the seats, like location of the area, that if somebody did have happen, that they could find them a lot quicker? Like, imagine a person having a heart attack or a seizure or something like that, and it's a pretty difficult place to find. So that's what I noticed. And I left my number so somebody could call me back and just to see if there was any movement on it. And I don't know if anything happened, because I haven't been up there since last year.
So we're not saying then that obviously there's signs literally everywhere in the country, but what we're talking about here is your beaches, your coastal walks, Glenveagh, other areas, to have sort of regular identifying markers in different locations so that in the case of an emergency, that info can be passed on to the emergency services and someone can get seen to sooner rather than later.
Absolutely. Even in isolated car park areas where people don't know, like up at Law Salt there, there's a car park there and there could be a location number put there. And there's loads of different places throughout out Donegal, that, like Angrania and Alia too as well up there. There's loads of places where there could be identification numbers or whatever put in place, and people are able to locate it. I mean, they don't need to be ugly or nothing to spoil the area, but we need they need to definitely something out there so people can receive treatment as quick as possible. Because I believe there was a story, I don't know if it's true or not now, but there was somebody phoned looking for a doctor, and it's an emergency, and he says, searching a hospital or searching a shopping centre, but it was the wrong shopping centre. The ambulance went in.
That's going to happen, of course. Now, the problem is, and I don't want to be negative, is the problem not, it's like life rings. You know, we have people, and it's unbelievable, but, you know, life rings on a bridge or life rings at the beach, that they will remove them. And when people need them, they're not there. My concern is the reason we don't do things like that is maintenance. Like, we'd have to put them in such a way where they couldn't fade, they couldn't be obscured with graffiti, they couldn't be kicked down or lost. Because if you're putting something in like that, people expect it to be there. And is part of the problem that maybe we don't want to do it because we don't want to have to try and maintain them, Brendan?
Well, hey, there's a lot of good people throughout this county, hey, that go about collecting rubbish. I see them all the time, especially around Downings and Dermot Ward, cutting grass, etc. And that's the kind of people that you need to bring on board to check these boys out and these life-saving apparatuses out. And the parish of Meva have a great amount of defibrillators. I sponsored one myself over the Carrigart Chapel. And do you know, every parish should have a defibrillator as well.
Yeah, of course they should. The thing, again, and I had this conversation. I had this conversation with Brian at the time, and it wasn't to discourage it; it's to make sure that we're doing the right thing. I mean, we already have technology whereby there's websites and apps. What3words.com, Brendan. So, say for instance, no matter where in the world we were, if I was beside you and one of us, God forbid, came into difficulty, you can open up, like, the what three words for where I am right at the moment is swap strings bland. And I could give that to the emergency services and they can pinpoint me down to a square meter. Would we not be better? Would we not be better trying to sort of encourage the use of apps and technology like that in education rather than going back to the old school sort of physical? Because in countries like Germany or Austria or wherever it might be, this sort of what three words is used quite commonly. And I do know emergency services here do have access to it as well. So should we not be making sure that, you know, have you downloaded the what three words app and that type of stuff and embrace the technology? And it means that no matter where anyone is, that they could use this technology and get emergency services them, rather than popping up old-fashioned signposts.
Well, it's a good idea, and probably all the signposts are going to be expensive as well. Mm. And to maintain, you get some gulp in trying to pull them down as well.
But see, God forbid, like if me and you were 100 foot from that signpost, again, in that scenario, it might as well not be there. You almost would need to be at it. Do you know? Whereas with this app, with this technology, no matter where you are, you can go anywhere in the world and give me three words and I can input them in this website and I can know where you are within 2 feet. Like,
well, it's something I would need to look at because I wouldn't be the greatest man at technology and apps and all that crack, you know.
No, I get you, yeah.
The older generation wouldn't be great with it either.
I know, so but the older
generation... probably something out there to promote.
I get you, but the older generation in your scenario is still going to have to get a phone out and still going to have to say, we're at marker 552. Do you know that sort of a way? So it's not like... it's technology free. If you know what I mean, technology is going to form part of this whole conversation.
And how does it work as far as signals concerned as well? Do you need a signal to have
You do, but you would also need a signal to raise the emergency services with the physical signs. Mm-hmm. You get me? I think it's a great conversation, and I think we're on the same page. It's a case of whether we go physical or we'd spend the money on sort of promoting the what three words system. And have signs up here and there saying, have you downloaded the app in the case of an emergency, you know? I mean, you could literally identify someone 6 feet apart on Mount Errigal, God forbid. It's not Mount Errigal, on Errigal Mountain. But...
yeah, well, it's a good idea.
Yeah. All right, then so.
Hopefully it'll take... thank you very much.
But I agree with you, Brendan. I agree with you, Brendan. We need to do something. But people like you have got a strong voice if it's to sort of focus on doing more of these signs or promoting the what three words or some alternative. Either way, I think we can all work together on it. Listen, Brendan, thank you very much indeed. That's Brendan Tiny Vaughan, who is the recipient of the Tip O'Neill Award this year and is also a future guest, by the way, on the Greg Hughes podcast. And I do want to say a big thank you too, by the way, because I was off yesterday. The IMRO National Radio Awards cover the island of Ireland, and the Greg Hughes podcast, which is not broadcast on Highland Radio, but it's available on highlandradio.com. It's been shortlisted amongst some of the best local and national podcasters in the whole country. Myself and Caroline Orr, who researches and produces, are very proud of that. We've only been on air or releasing it for a while, and it's consistently been high in the podcast charts and now has been shortlisted for an incredibly prestigious national award. We could not be happier. And you know what makes it extra sweet? Our colleague Joe Dex, it was that episode that was selected where Joe talks about vinyl, vodka and him. And that was a podcast that has had a real positive impact on a lot of people. So it's a double win. It's fantastic that Joe, his bravery for telling his story, has been recognised as part of the podcast being recognised. And a big congratulations to Oisin Kelly as well, who has been shortlisted for a Sports Broadcaster of the Year award. It's no mean feat, you know. We don't enter a million categories. So to get any nominations at all is very welcome. I think one radio station, I think News Talk, they're shortlisted 19 times. And that's about five times more than the categories we were even being considered for. So it's to get nominations like we had across the island of Ireland is a great honour, and it's fantastic. Right, let's take a quick break. Just in relation to the codes, actually, Hi, in relation to Councillor Carr's codes for emergency coastal services, Fintra Beach in Killybegs is a blue flag beach and it has an air code. It is located on the fence as you approach the main car park. Yes, indeed. But I think why I like What Three Words is you could literally pinpoint someone wherever on Fintra Beach. And I know it's not massive, but is it to the left? Is it to the right? Is it down to the middle? My word, you can even locate someone in the water if they were stationary. That is how detailed that system is. Sinn Féin Health spokesperson, Deputy David Cullinan, joins me on the show now. Thanks, David, for your time again. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg.
Right, now, you've obtained or been scrutinising new data released by the HSC, and it shows wide variations in performance in delivering cancer treatment for patients. You know, back in the day, this would have been described as, you know, in a headline, death by geography or something like that. I mean, we should all have equal access to life-saving care, surely.
Well, first of all, I just want to commend all of the staff who work in our cancer services and cancer centres. And I know that they do a first-class job in wanting to ensure that every cancer patient has the best chance of survival and recovery. And I know that in many areas, performance is actually quite strong, and that should be acknowledged. Unfortunately, what we've seen in recent years is a slippage in a lot of areas, which is very concerning. So if you look at some of the problems, it's in the area of radiotherapy. Some hospitals are actually performing quite poorly, so there is wide variations across the state. But the most problematic are in areas like lung cancer surgery, prostate cancer surgery, and breast cancer surgery. In prostate cancer, particularly, 62% of patients were not seen within the recommended time period. In lung cancer, was 43% were not seen on time. So those type of numbers are exceptionally high. They're going in the wrong direction. And the recommended time frame and recommended wait times that I'm talking about are based on international best practice. It's based on what is seen as the optimum wait time to ensure that a patient can get that rapid access to care and then have the best chance of recovery. And we know that outcomes can improve dramatically if patients are seen on time, if they get a timely diagnosis, and if they get the surgeries and the treatment that they need on time. So unfortunately, Greg, in far too many areas, we're seeing the data go in the wrong direction, which means thousands of patients across the state are simply not being seen within that recommended time period.
Of course, and much of that data still applies to us because we have to travel from the northwest to receive these treatments. More locally, though, and it's perhaps more reflective of what's going on within the northwest, is in the area of breast surgery.
Yeah, breast surgery is one of the problems. Prostate cancer surgery is a real problem. So I know that many patients in Donegal would travel to Galway. Prostate surgery in Galway is actually one of the most shocking figures, where 83% of patients were not seen on time. Like, that's probably the worst performing data of any of the cancer surgeries that I've seen in any hospital. We're also seeing problems elsewhere in Galway as well. In Altnagalvin, we're seeing problems in terms of access to radiotherapy, where unfortunately the figures have gone in the wrong direction over the last number of years, and when you compare this year to last year. So we are seeing wide variations. The difficulty for people who live in Donegal is that you have to travel for that treatment. And it's very frightening when a patient is diagnosed with cancer, and for their families. Of course, there's been lots of improvements. You know, outcomes are much better. And all of that's for the good. But people still want rapid access to care. It's obviously more problematic when you have to travel longer distances to get that treatment. And I know that cancellations can happen, people being told they'll be seen within the recommended time period, and then waiting and waiting for that call to get the treatment can add to the stress. So for all of those reasons, it's really important that hospitals like Galway and those regional centres that are servicing counties outside of their own area are properly staffed and equipped to ensure that patients can get that rapid access, because I'm conscious that in some areas and areas that are more remote, it can be more problematic for patients simply because they have to travel for treatment.
Okay. Well, listen, we must leave it there, actually. You were very succinct and to the point, and I do appreciate that. That is Sinn Féin's health spokesperson, Deputy David Cullinan. We'll get more on those figures, of course, where it is relevant. We welcome onto the programme now Owen Corry, editor of Travel Extra. Hello, Owen.
Good morning to you.
Good to have you with us. Now, To be honest with you, this never really applied to me because I always took my passport with me. But anyway, visitors to Britain from Ireland will require a passport from the 28th of September to the enter the country. I note some of this coverage, Owen, saying the UK, but we still don't need a passport yet, I don't think, to travel from Donegal into Derry. So presumably this is into Britain we're talking about, is it?
Yeah, it's been, the airlines have required this for a couple of years now. The ferries did not, and it's something that the UK, the Britain side, the Welsh side really, from Dublin, have decided that they're implementing. It's going to be policed at the check-in stage. That's going to create a few problems, I would imagine. It's due to come in September the 28th. Quite a few people who travel by ferry do, you know, they do need, require photo ID. They use driving license. There's a lot of coach travel that goes to soccer matches. It's probably going to be, particularly in the opening weeks, a little bit difficult to police because the ferries are the ones that are going to have to police it. The Larne and Belfast services to Scotland don't require it, and the Belfast to Liverpool one doesn't require it, but all the ones from Dublin and Rosslare will require a passport on the UK, on the Britain side and the Welsh side.
Does this mean that they're having to invest then in the infrastructure, because this effectively comes then strict border control?
There'll be no new infrastructure because they have a spot check system anyway, where they look for photo ID. And that's, I'd imagine, the photo ID that's accepted is the change here rather than any big infrastructural. The listeners will remember Ryanair used to accept way, way back that they followed the British rule that you didn't require a passport, and they unilaterally implemented it themselves for their own reasons, for their own security reasons, all the way back in 2009, October 2009. Caused a few problems because gang of lads would arrive going over for the match and one of them would only have a driving licence, but it was strictly enforced, and then Aer Lingus enforced it since February of this year. So really the ferries are the last means of travelling from by sea or across the channel from Ireland to Britain that didn't require a passport. Obviously there's political sensitivities when it comes to going from Larne and going from Belfast across by channel. But effectively you need a photo ID anyway, and a lot of people use their passports for that.
Yeah, and this would be required out of Belfast into Scotland?
A photo ID is required.
But passport?
A driving licence will still suffice.
Okay.
A driving licence will suffice. Some people have used other forms of ID. I know somebody who used their NUJ card as their ID. But, you know, it's basically you're in that relationship with the guy who's checking. And they don't check everyone, by the way. It goes by spot checks. I've travelled a lot between Ireland and Wales by ferry. I don't think I've ever been checked. But I've always had it just in case, because the time you wouldn't have it is the time you checked. But it is spot check. Will it be enforced that everybody has to be checked? I doubt it. But what they will require, and the border people have a great facility for pushing all the messy bit of stuff back onto the airline or the ferry company, and they will require the ferry company to check. That's a little bit of an extra headache for ferry companies.
But, I mean, obviously we're a small island. Are they not concerned, I wonder, Owen, and this is maybe a political question and not a travel question, that people will just travel into Britain from Belfast rather than Dublin?
Option is always there, but I'd imagine if you're travelling if you're arriving in Scotland and you've come from Dublin and you're going back down to England, somebody will checking your ID would ask what's this all about. It's probably, I don't know if it's illegal, it's not something we can recommend on the airwaves.
No.
But the option is there. The option is there, and I'd imagine the policing of it will not be done by the ferry company in Belfast. Most people go through Belfast, Cairn Ryan now, and a little bit through Larne, because P&O still have that service. But they won't be policed by the ferry company. It'll be at the border that questions will be asked.
And
you do require a photo ID.
And for the most of us, it'll be fine, Owen, but it will catch out, A, those who even though it's talked about everywhere and everywhere, people will not have heard about it and still land with the wrong ID. But also, there are those who didn't need a passport or never had one and were free to travel, and now we're going to have to decide what to do next, get a passport or stop those trips. So it's a small group. I would say this will actually affect quite severely, but it will affect them quite severely.
It will affect them, and you're right, the mischief makers always find a way around. There is particularly the Premiership supporting, and the people who go to Cheltenham, they don't go anywhere else. Mm. In fact, their entire life is just going, and they will have spent their entire life travelling to and from Anfield or Old Trafford or whatever, and not required a passport. And I can guarantee you that some of them won't have heard of this. They'll turn up after September the 28th, not knowing you require a passport. You know, us in the media, we sort of self-glorify that everybody's well-informed and they're all listening to us.
But they aren't.
To give you an example of what I'm talking about, somebody in April 2020, somebody showed up in Dublin Airport to get his Emirates flight to Dubai, unaware that the whole world had been shut down by COVID, expecting his ticket to be honoured. But there are a disconnected group, and there are people who will not know that they need a passport.
But part of me envies them too.
Such a simpler life, Greg. Okay. Wouldn't it be wonderful?
Oh, and listen, thanks for the heads up for those that are listening. And even those listening might forget, but sure, look, thank you.
September the 28th. Okay. September 28th is
which
the key date.
Yeah, it's a month away. Thank you. Owen Corry, editor of Travel Extra. So if you're travelling from the Republic into Britain, you will need a passport, effectively. Not effectively, actually. Obviously, for us here in the Northwest, again, this is why we're always different, isn't it? The majority of us probably travel from Belfast, and it might not affect because that would be seen as internal travel. But it always then highlights the strange situation we have on this island. Nepal, read Nepal. Morning, Greg. CNN are reporting 1,300 missing in Nepal. And yeah, and just to the point earlier, and maybe some of you weren't tuned in, it's just the way this formula that massive tragedies like this are reported, and I find it a little bit frustrating, whereby, you know, early reports of 12 confirmed dead in an earthquake or a flash flooding tragedy like this, and then it'll go up to 130 and then 300, and then they'll give up on that, and in 4 or 5 days they'll go looking for a story of hope whereby one person has been found surviving, you know, on rainwater or something. It's just the formula for the media reporting it. But CNN reporting 1,300 missing in Nepal, which is talks to the actual extent of the tragedy, and reporting accurately, even though it's less accurate, the extent of that tragedy, rather than talking about 130 souls lost. I was in a cafe yesterday afternoon. I ordered tenders and chips. I got 6 Big Al's chicken tenders and the smallest tenders I've ever seen in my life, frozen 2-kilogram bag for €22. I got 6 on my plate, no chips or salad, €10.70, and was charged an extra €4.90 for a plate of chips, about 20 chips, and then a can of Coke, so Northern Coke, so no return on the 15 cent. I was charged €2.60. How crazy is the prices in Donegal going to get? Wow, okay, you really have broken that down, I get you. Greg, any possibility on the discussion of payments to our local councillors? Some get almost 60,000. Can anyone explain these costs to councillors in some areas? Not carpool, right? Presumably you're talking about a salary, maybe chucking in some money for security and travel expenses there, which are vouched for, and you do have to be pretty careful. You can get caught out. There have been councillors in the past that maybe claimed for a journey to Lifford, but they did carpool. So yeah, of course we can look into that if there's an interest in it. We heard from a bus driver. They were at the toilets. The one toilet, he said, a Portaloo in Burton Port. He said it was full on Friday and not of people. I was in Burton Port on Sunday and I had the same experience. It was totally disgusting, especially when you have children with you. Yeah, I don't know what to do. Like, I would say, could we? I mean, if you go into one of those toilets and it's clearly full, do you just top it up? But maybe you're desperate. Maybe you've got a medical condition that means you either do it there or you're on yourself. I don't know. But I mean, if there's one public toilet and people know it's going to be busy, say, for instance, on Iron Moor like last weekend, where is the maintenance? Where is the care? to ensure that it's a pleasurable experience. I don't know. Keep them coming into us, by the way. Welcome back to the programme. We're joined on it now by Dr. Adele Duggan, Clinical Director at the National Poisons Information Centre. Thank you for joining us today, Adele.
Thank you very much.
It's good to have you on the programme. Now, we are talking about contact with the Poison Helpline, and we'll go through some of the things people are contacting the helpline on. But would you agree with me, Doctor, that these conversations are equally as important, I suppose, in getting the information out there that this service is there and, you know, maybe a good opportunity for people to have the number written down or the contact written down and stuck somewhere accessible, because you never know when you might need it?
Absolutely. Hopefully you'll never need it, but if you do, it's a very useful number to have. This year we're celebrating our 60th anniversary for when the Poison Centre opened. Initially was opened for healthcare professionals, and then 15 years ago in 2011 we opened it up for a public poisons information line that operates from 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. and that's, the number is 809-2166. If you want to write it down on the fridge or put it into your, I suppose more importantly, put it into your phone. And so I suppose over 6,500 calls roughly we receive from members of the public, predominantly concerning children who have accidentally ingested something or been exposed to a poison. So it is a useful number to have.
Yeah, for sure. And what are the majority of calls in relation to, Adele?
The most calls we get concern medication, about one in every two calls, and paracetamol is still the commonest call that we are drug that we are called about. And I think it's because it's probably quite accessible. It's an over-the-counter medication. It's in everybody's homes. It's in everybody's homes, and therefore really accessible to children. Children are naturally inquisitive, especially from the ages of 1 to 4, and they're exploring their environment, they're climbing up on shelves and reaching for stuff. And Calpol is quite a sweet medicine. I know my children, I had no problem ever giving it to them because they quite liked it. So if they take a taste of it, they'll take a drink out of the bottle. And so when we get a call from a very anxious parent worried about their child. And it is a rare event for them, but I suppose for us, we get these calls. We're used to dealing with these calls every day. And then what we do is try and get the information as to how much was taken. And then based on the weight of the child, we can decide whether this is a toxic dose and needs to go into an emergency department for a paracetamol level, or whether the child is under the treatment level, that the amount that they've taken is okay, and then give them advice regarding that.
In my personal experience of this, and thankfully it hasn't happened too often, it's the uncertainty of if anything has actually been taken, and if so, how much. People often, I presume, struggle with that information because you're in a panic, right? And I don't know how many tablets were there or how full the bottle was or how many detergent capsules might have been there, but I did see one that seemed to have been interfered with. Do you know that kind of way? It's the sort of lack of information in that panic situation as a parent that I would struggle with.
Yes, and I suppose our staff are very experienced in trying to, they're very professional in the try and calm, I suppose, the caller and go through. So we'll always look at the worst case scenario and then calculate it on that. So we'll say sometimes stuff will have been drank, it might be down the front of the child, you might know how much was in the bottle, but we see what the dose, the milligrams per mil in the bottle is, and then how much they think might be taken out of that. Was it the last time they saw it? Was that a full bottle, or was that a half a bottle, or was it nearly gone? And based on the worst case scenario, we calculate the dose out so that we always will err, I suppose, on the side of caution and the worst case scenario.
Just in relation to, we're talking about ingestion here, but say, for instance, a parent is concerned that maybe one of these products came in contact with the child's eyes or skin. Is this helpline for them also, or is that more for a GP?
No, this headline is also for them. So about 17% of our calls concern household products. And one of the commonest thing would be your liquid detergent capsules. And these are quite colourful and squidgy that are, I suppose, attractive. And some parents, you know, your two-year-old might be trying to get them involved and give them the liquid detergent capsule to put into the washing machine. We advise against doing that to keep these products out of harm and out of reach of children. When they're in contact with water, the mechanism is that they will burst. And if some of that goes into the eye, then it can cause problems. It can cause a conjunctivitis and worst case scenario, it can do injury to the cornea.
So time is always of the essence too in those situations, isn't it?
Yes. So we would advise to give us a call and we will go through the steps of what to do in that situation. Mm. So it's usually that you're washing out the eye for about 15 minutes to try and get rid of the chemical off the surface of the eye. And then we'll kind of go through what symptoms to expect and then when to go and see either your GP or if it's severe enough, whether you need to go into an emergency department.
Yeah, and I suppose prevention's better than cure too, Adele, because, you know, I don't think we would consciously leave medicines on a low shelf, yet we probably keep a lot of the stuff we're talking about in terms of household products under the sink at below eye level, in fact. You know, not all of us, but some, and others have catches on the doors and all those types of things. But if you think about it, you know, like we definitely, I think most of us would put the medicines up high, but perhaps not give as much consideration to the other dangerous stuff. We have that down low.
Absolutely. And under the sink, and I'm guilty of myself of putting some serious agents there. So some of your bleaches might be down there, oven cleaners, drain cleaners, all those are quite toxic, especially your oven and your drain cleaner. They can do a lot of damage if they're ingested. And I suppose your liquid detergent capsules as well. And, you know, we would say keep them out of sight, out of reach and locked away. And I suppose even the medicines up high, like children, they might, you know, they might start off walking, but then they start discovering their environment and start climbing up onto shelves and shelves you thought they could never get up to this, and then suddenly they'll be able to reach up and take something out of a shelf. So we would just say always out of sight, out of reach and locked away.
And finally, a big worry for me always is to these little flat batteries which people might have in their scales or other remote controls or other items, and they can be very attractive to a toddler to pick up and put in their mouth. Not exclusively those type of batteries, but batteries also something we have to be extra careful about.
Absolutely. Your button batteries in particular, but all types of battery, but particularly the button batteries, because they can get lodged in the tube going down into the stomach, and they can basically burn away the lining of that tube and cause major problems. Or if the child is small enough, they can block off the airway. So these are particularly dangerous household products and should be kept out of reach of small children.
Yeah, okay, listen, good advice. We have to be aware of these things because prevention is better than cure, of course, but it's always good to have those details. I'll remind listeners of the contacts, but for now, I'll thank you, Dr. Adele Duggan. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much. Thank
you. Bye-bye. Look after yourself. Right, so as I say, a number we hope we would never need, but why not have it to hand just in case you do need it? 01 809 2166 01 809 2166, because with the best will in the world, we just never, it's very hard to cover all the bases, isn't it, to make sure that something isn't ingested. And as I say, in my experience, it's the concern of something being ingested, not that it actually was. Like that little battery, for an example, I remember going into an absolute panic, and as it turned out, I found the battery I thought had been ingested, but until such time as I did, it was a very worrying time, and I wouldn't like to have had to try and find out that information. It's the Poison Helpline. Just have that number there close to hand, 01 809 2166, and it's possible maybe, you know, aunties, uncles, granny and grandads with no small children anymore, maybe even more important to have that, because you could have the wee ones over and your house may not be as bomb proof as the parents' house. So as I say, no harm having that.
If all your listeners could download a free app called Just Three Words, which I was mentioning there, it's amazing and you can be located to within a few feet. We use it to work over Nokala Mountain and it's a great app to have. Great if you have an accident and don't know where you are. And as I say, even if you know where you are specifically, I'm on Loch Salt, I'm in Bother. Well, where are you on Loch Salt? Are you at the beginning, at the end, are you at the middle? The What Three Words app, well worth having. You can say, and I'm going to use three random words, cat, dog, horse, as silly as that might sound. You give that to the emergency services and those three words will pinpoint you to your exact location. So it doesn't matter how close you are to a physical sign. It doesn't really matter if you've, you know, got Google Maps open. Those three words, What Three Words, would locate you to within a foot. Done low toilets at the weekend. Gotta say, they were perfect. So a clap on the back and well done to those involved. I snapped this and sent it to your local council. So it's a video of a toilet which I've seen and it is very clean. I'm not sure if we need it. It explains it to me. I'm not sure if I need to put it out there. So good to praise good toilets when they're good. We do have to talk about the bad ones and Burton Port Portaloo seems to have been pretty nasty over the weekend. Passports on ferries. If the cost of living and fuel prices keep rising, there'll be no need for passports. I get you. Another, then they'll need to drastically improve the passport service. I applied for passports for myself and my children and it's been non-stop asking for more and more documents. I have no utility bills as I rent and pay with a keypad online app for electricity and phone is a mobile through an app, etc, etc. This is over 6 months trying. I was born and live in Derry all my life. How if there are hundreds of people posting online about getting Irish citizenships and passports when I've been born and bred here and can't get one? Well, there are other ways to prove your address. They might accept. They might accept a bank statement. What else? There has to be alternatives to utility bills. I understand the frustration, and I don't want to be preachy, but maybe pause for a few minutes and just see what they'll take and gather that together. I'm speaking as a person with someone else who took years to get Hudson's passport. Because of not sitting down and just saying, right, what do we need? What needs to be done here? And once we did that, I don't know why getting your other half to read a passport number to you as you try and type it in can cause so much stress. B5925. B, D, Delta, Bravo, which was it? Does this include when we're travelling to Scotland to and from Northern Ireland? No, it doesn't, because that would be seen as an internal sort of an internal journey. I was in Rosnella on Sunday and the toilets were disgusting. Absolutely zero maintenance. Is that still ongoing down there? Okay. That one's been coming up for the longest time. We got a contact from a listener saying there is an issue with quads destroying listener gras. The caller says, I usually try to be nice and kind and patient, generally speaking. I'm not an angry person, but I'm absolutely fuming just now. And we've seen pictures here following this listener's most recent visit and also, unfortunately, the most recent visit by quad enthusiasts. They say it's an absolute disgrace. Some parts are so cut up as to be impassable on foot. So if you're coming for a walk or bringing the kids for a wee adventure, make sure everyone is wearing boots. Local councillor Terry Crossan joins me now. Good morning. How are you getting on?
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
I'm good. And listener Grau Woods is, a very attractive part of a generally attractive place, that being Muff. But unfortunately, it is being used and abused and it makes it really unusable for regular people who aren't on quads.
Yeah, I've been approached on numerous occasions in this past while regarding quads and scramblers being used there on an irregular basis. As you know, Cisne Grah is a very important habitat for our red squirrel. There have been sightings of the pine marten there too. It's a very important deciduous native woodland, and this type of behaviour is having a serious detrimental impact on the biodiversity of that area.
Yeah, it doesn't help too either for not just the animals, but for people who want to go in and get in touch with nature in the lower parts where a lot of this activity is taking place. They've left just mud baths.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely, Greg. And it's a very popular place for parents with young children to walk through the trails and point out various aspects of nature and trees and plants and bird song and all of that. But that is being seriously disrupted by this very irresponsible behaviour. I have been in contact with Gardaí. I've been in contact with Culture, and I've been in contact with the Donegal County Council Biodiversity Officer, and we're going to try to organise a collaborative approach here to see what can be done to totally eliminate or at least curtail this type of behaviour. And as I said earlier, it is having a serious detrimental impact on the whole biodiversity, and also it has turned parts of the wood into a quagmire of mud.
I suppose in the first instance we can let people know that are using this space, and maybe they think this is just open public use ground that they can go in and have a bit of fun in, that you can't, and you could face, you know, sanction for it. So if you're innocently going in there, you perhaps would like to desist. But practically speaking, is there any way to restrict the size of vehicles that can get in there? I mean, obviously you want people with pushchairs and all. I'm not sure of the layout and the access points, Terry. You might have a better knowledge or maybe not, but is it practical to sort of have a gate where people can walk through, but you know, someone can't take a squad in, a quad? These could be scramblers as well, by the way, which would get in through that space of a pram, so it's not easy.
To be honest, quads or scramblers could access it at almost any point.
Okay.
But what we need is we need Culture to have up signage clearly indicating that quads and scramblers and any type of motor vehicles are prohibited there because of the use by children, families. It's a health and safety issue, and it is also having noise pollution, the damage to the vegetation, and all that is very serious and has to be halted.
All right, listen, thanks for that. Keep us updated. I do appreciate it, Councillor Terry Crossan there. If you have any experience of that situation up there in Listenagrow Woods, let us know. Some good news, actually, that Donegal has secured two places in the top five of a new ranking in Ireland's best beauty spots for scenic autumn getaway. Sleaford League ranks third overall, while Glenveagh National Park takes fifth place in the 2026 Irish Beauty Spots Index, which compared 17 destinations across the island of Ireland based on traveller ratings, accommodation quality, affordability and accessibility. So this is information gathered by visitors. So what does it tell us? Well, as I say, there's a couple of ways in which these are ranked. Keane Bay, Achill Island, Mayo, number one. Curraghclough Beach, Wexford, two. Sleeve League, Donegal, three. Marble Arch Case, Fermanagh, four. Glenveagh National Park, five. But they also go by the ratings. So Sleeve League had a 4.8 rating out of five, which is equal to the top score. Glenveagh, 4.7. In terms of accommodation, this is quite interesting. Mayo, 4.8. Donegal just 4.3 and 4.2, respectively, between Sleeve League and Glenveagh National Park. I think that's unfair. In terms of accommodation affordability, we ranked quite well there. Sleeve League, €154 compared to €199 for Mayo, €187 for Glenveagh. And accessibility from the airport, we often see this as a disadvantage. But Keane Bay in Mayo, 4 hours, 27 minutes from the airport. Sleeve League, 3 hours. Glenveagh National Park, 2 hours and 9 minutes. So I don't know what airports they're travelling from. But anyway, we both of those places in the top five based off people's actual experiences. And I think that's blooming good. Right, now we are speaking with Dan van Hammersveld, who's Director of Corporate Affairs and Communications at Japan Tobacco International Ireland. And Dan, good morning to you. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And I think what we've seen from the latest empty pack survey is that the majority of cigarettes being bought, not just in Donegal, because I've seen figures nationally, the majority already are cigarettes that are illegal, effectively. People aren't paying tax on them.
Yes, absolutely. Well, independent research found that, for example, in Letterkenny, almost 60% of cigarette packs had absolutely no Irish tax paid on them. And of those, actually 16% were counterfeit. So what that means is that clearly smokers are ditching their pricey legal cigarettes and moving into the illicit channels. And then you can wonder, well, what does that mean? Well, for a shop in Letterkenny, for example, it's not just about cigarettes. It's real turnover and footfall that they lose to essentially criminal gangs selling cigarettes out of their car boots, of which they, of course, do not have to pay any VAT or excise at all. And across the country, that is costing retailers over $1 billion in lost turnover.
Mm. And the fear is that there are calls for tax to be increased, that a box of cigarettes in this country would end up being over €20, this to try and discourage smokers. But there are other people, I presume you among them, that believe that if people want to smoke, they'll smoke and they'll actually just buy them elsewhere with a loss of revenue to the state.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what the actual data shows as well. If we look at, for example, the smoking rates since 2019, we've had a number of very high excise tax increases. 2 years ago, for example, we had the highest excise tax increase ever of €1. And since 2019, however, the smoking incidence across Ireland has remained stable at around 17%. Whereas the consumption of illicit products, so products on which no Irish tax is paid, has more than doubled, and in some countries even tripled.
Dan, you work for the tobacco industry, don't you? And I can understand the angle that you're coming at it from. But, I mean, you know, you're still talking about people smoking, and also your company that employs you has a lot of interest in pivoted to vaping products and nicotine patches and those types of things. Does it bother you at all having to come on and speak on behalf of that industry, knowing the damage it causes? And I'm not trying to have a go at you. I'm just curious.
Well, at the end of the day, we're selling a legal product that informed adults are able to buy and consume as they so wish, as is the case with many other consumption products that carry risks with them, right? So in that sense, I believe that there should be, of course, consideration for the health risks that come with the consumption of any product, really. There should be some consideration for the retailers as well when it comes to implementing policies that clearly have very, very adverse effects.
Okay. Do you smoke or vape? Had interest. Last question.
I use some nicotine products occasionally. Yes, indeed.
Listen, Dan, thank you for that. Dan van Hammersveld, who's Director of Corporate Affairs and Communications at Japan Tobacco International Ireland.
Business Matters is brought to you by Print Supplies Frosts. Fed up waiting days for an engineer to service your printer or photocopier? Tired of running out of ink? Print Supplies keeps your office running smoothly with managed print solutions, local Donegal support and remote monitoring. With 21 years in business, Print Supplies helps save your business time and money. Email sales at printsupplies.ie to find out more.
Afternoon. Good morning, Chris. Good morning. How are you getting on?
Very good.
All right, okay. Right, Business Matters podcast coming up for you later today and on the radio on Sunday, but let's get to some news. Inflation, where are we at?
Yeah, just wanted to flag this. We're all aware of how things have gone up in the shops. The latest figures show our inflation rate 3.4%. Now, looking at a slightly longer scale, and I was buying bananas, and this is what prompted this. they were 2.29 or something. Mm-hmm. And I remember bananas were always 1.29 or whatever. But to put it in context, officially the figures show that since July 2021, prices in the economy have risen by around 25% in total. So if you're feeling the pinch in your pocket, that's a really why it's gone up a quarter, and food by a higher amount.
You hear all these ads. I went to a supermarket yesterday and did a something of a weekly shop. 97 euro, tapped or scanned, whatever shop I was in, savings 78 cent. Ooh, you know, yeah. 78 cent off a 90 euro spend. Car and house insurance premiums falling. I presume we're going to have this caveat of home insurance companies wanting an extra 24 euro off each and every insurance policy holder to cover flooding, or am I ahead of you on this one?
Well, maybe you are. Now, these figures come from bonkers.ie, which is a comparison website, and it shows that car insurance premiums have fallen for the 10th month in a row, down around 4% on average, and home insurance costs down around 3% on average year on year. Now, in particular, in relation to the car insurance premiums, this is due to a number of reasons. Part of them have been changes in legislation. There's been reduced injury claim costs. There's better claims management, cost control by insurers. So it's all filtering through. But look, it's still an expensive thing. There's also a reduction in the insurance compensation fund levy. So that has helped matters as well. But we all know, and you've touched on it there, you know, you get a, particularly in terms of home insurance, you get a spike
They're looking for a 24 euro per house levy. Yeah. And do you know what? If it means that people in flood hit areas are covered, maybe it shouldn't come down to regular people. But, you know, I'd almost take the hit on it, to be honest with you. But anyway, we'll see. That's a different story. We might circle back to some business news, but I want to make sure we get to talk about the podcast as well. And Orla Vera Accessories are focused today, Chris.
Yes, now this is a boutique brand based in Buncrana, set up by Orla O'Hagan. Very interesting story. She went to college and went to university in Leicester, studied over there. Fashion and shoes were her thing. Ended up going to London, working for a big fashion firm. COVID hit. She came back to Buncrana and then started her business, Orla Vera Accessories. Orla Vera O'Hagan is her full name. Now, what's really interesting is that she sources what would have been waste leather. She's even had leather from the likes of BMW and Rolls-Royce and used that, making handcrafted handbags, and now employing three people. And I think we have a little clip here, and she explains how it all began.
When I did move home, I had like a leather sewing machine that I bought off my lecturer when I was in college, and I had like leather left over from university, and I just kind of started to make stuff like in my spare time, because you know I was at nothing, and as lucky as we are to walk the beach every day, but there's only so many times you can do that in a day, so I kind of had to keep myself busy. And then through that, then I kind of found my love for kind of hand making stuff. And once I started to post on Instagram, then it just kind of took off. And I gave up the idea then of looking for jobs to move back to London and just thought I'd give it a go here.
All right. Second guest on the show, the MD of City of Derry Airport.
Yes, passenger numbers are soaring at the airport. Now, they're still a long way off the 500,000 peak that was back in 2008. But there has been the introduction of a number of new routes, and then we've got the impending introduction in October of the Dublin Derry service. And we have a clip here from Steve Fraser, the managing director, and he's very confident about the next 5 years.
In 5 years' time, Chris, I would like us to have a steady stream of the seasonal routes that our customers are telling us they want. That's the Malaga, Tenerife, Palma, Faro. I'd love to see a couple of key European destinations on there. Like Amsterdam sticks out like a sore thumb for one we'd like to achieve. But then you've also got your Rome's, your Paris, your Frankfurt. We'd like to increase the frequencies on those, Edinburgh, Birmingham, Glasgow, Manchester, up to the same kind of frequencies as we have on the London Heathrow, or at least daily. So there's a lot to do, but it's all achievable. And just given time, as you say, in 5 years, it'll be a very different looking airport. And I would hope in 5 years we've doubled the passenger numbers from where we are now.
Yeah, used to in the past when things were different, be able to use Derry heading to Faro and all that type of stuff. And not unlike Ireland West Airport, it's a wonderful experience, a wonderful way to start your holiday when it's relatively close, easy to get through and onto your plane. So the more options, the better. And if they get them, people will go. There's just no doubt about that. So much more from Steve and from Orla on the podcast, which is available a little later on today, isn't it?
That's right, Greg. It'll be scheduled for just after 2 o'clock.
Wow, OK. I'm very impressed. So we'll get it from 2. And if you want to listen to it live on the radio, we'll play it out.
It will be on Sunday after the 6 o'clock news.
Give us your contact details, Chris.
Businessmatters@highlandradio.com.
Thank you so very much indeed. Thanks so much to you, by the way, at home, at work, wherever you are, for listening to the show today. That's where we have to leave it. We'll be back on air with you tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock with a brilliant Friday panel.